What did WEAC accomplish?
So WEAC was the Wilmington Education Advisory Committee, which was a voluntary body pulled together by the prior governor. And what that group did was it established the commission as a sort of a semi-permanent body. And so what that group did most notably, obviously, was put together a proposal that bound together a redistricting plan with a proposal for funding reform. The group also advocated around a number of other policies and did a ton of research on conditions for Wilmington students, particularly low-income and English learners, and did probably the first in at least a long time, certainly the only group recently that was looking in an isolated way with our annual reports at the performance of Wilmington students specifically. So actually carving out that data and being able to look clearly at the educational system was perhaps not as functional as it needs to be for that specific population of students.
It's not going to be WEAC, but why bring it back?
So obviously we've had entities before that have addressed this problem, and I think that it actually far precedes WEAC and WEAC. Those are fresh in people's memories, but there's been many, many different bodies that have grappled with issues of equity in education in different ways and on a statewide scope as well as Wilmington. So I don't know if it's as much about bringing it back as it is, I would hope, a reinvigoration of the effort to really take action. I think we've, even during the WEAC work, I think it was often spoken about that there were many reports which preceded that work and that it was about standing on those shoulders to make progress on the recommendations, many of which had been made repeatedly. So I think I would look at this reauthorization of that body to take a slightly different shape is really about that, standing on the shoulders of work that was done before. Obviously, there were some notable, you know, non-successes in some of the proposals that were made, but there were also a lot of successes, too, that I'm not sure the commission gets enough credit for, but happy to talk about that. But I think, you know, it's really about that. It's a little bit of a refresh and a reorientation with, you know, I think the right folks around the table to dedicate to putting together a feasible plan of action that can move forward sooner rather than later and create the conditions necessary for success in Wilmington and I think inform success elsewhere because, as we know and has always been spoken about, the types of students that type of work is looking to improve the environment and the educational environment for our students that exist outside of Wilmington and all over the state of Delaware. So I think it's looking to take a step in the right direction, following many, many steps that have come before it.
What do you want the new group to focus on?
So the Reading Consortium for Educational Equity is the proposed name of the proposed new group. And the hope is that it does exactly that with a focus initially on the city of Wilmington, which I think is very evident both from the composition and will be seen from the charge, which is proposed in the companion bill, HB 222, is to make a plan for addressing the different ways that we can, through policy, improve conditions for teaching and learning for students that are going to public schools in the city of Wilmington. I think it's obviously not a radically different charge, maybe, but the vision is that if you have folks around the table who are very much engaged with that work on a daily basis, superintendents from all of the school districts that touch Wilmington, including the Vocational Technical School District, that will be able to really grapple in a substantive way with how to make that progress and how to move forward. And that will come with, you know, any proposals that of a legislative nature that body feels are the right the right proposals to make. But again, you know, without being prescriptive about what that might be, I think I have personal ideas about what could be a good direction to go in. But I think if you have 20 people around a table, you're probably going to hear 20 sort of varieties of ideas. And so the goal is to put everything on the table and actually come to a conclusion that, that folks can unify around, and hopefully that is reasonable enough that we can actually take action on as a state.
What about the idea of redistricting in Wilmington?
Redistricting is a tough conversation to have. Obviously, we want to enable that move if that is what the body thinks is the right thing to do. I think what WEAC put forward had some problematic elements to it that I was sympathetic to. You know, the focus on red clay, taking all the students, things like that. I think, you know, there's probably better ways to approach it. But I think that there is a lot of interest in the community in looking at those governance questions and you know, to what extent does governance matter and what different things can we do with governance in the city of Wilmington that would allow, you know, better equity and progress to be made. Redistricting on its own, and that was a criticism that we heard a lot, is not going to solve all the problems, and I don't know if there's anybody that thinks that it would. I do think governance matters, but I also think that, you know, challenging governing bodies to act in ways that are positive for students who struggle in the public school system is an absolutely necessary part of any next step. So I think that the hope is that this consortium is able to make those kinds of proposals as much, if not more, than looking at some of the more, you know, the lightning rod conversations of things like redistricting.
There's a lot of very wealthy people in Wilmington and a lot of very poor people in Wilmington. If they all went to their local schools, instead of having these very high-need schools, wouldn't there be more of a mix of students?
That's one of the toughest conversations to have about what's going on with our schools in the city of Wilmington, is that integration versus segregation, and there's a lot of conversations about how schools have maybe resegregated. That's a complicated and difficult conversation to have because it involves talking about race, it involves talking about class and those types of things. But I think those are really important things not to pretend don't exist. So I think the way I would frame it is maybe less about, you know, sort of the type of integration that you describe. I think what I know some of my colleagues and I have seen is a concern about the concentration of poverty that has come to proliferate more and more in our urban schools, and what that means in terms of how do you make a school with that profile really thrive? What do you need to make that work? And at what point do you think about alternatives to being able to make that work? And do you look at deconcentrating that poverty? And then how does that work? Because that's the really difficult conversation, I think, to have. And I would love to see folks like the experts that are proposed to be a part of this consortium have those kinds of conversations, as difficult as they are, and propose some solutions that are going to actually be workable. That's a really tall order, I know, but I think that, you know, we're adults, and a lot of us are adults with some level of authority over, you know, the conditions that we set for the lives of others, and I think that's a really important responsibility that we shouldn't shy away from.
What do you see happening with the Christina School District consolidation process?
Yeah, I mean, Christina's schools are going through a lot of changes, and so, of course, you're going to have community members that are very apprehensive about any kind of change, just like the changes that might come out of the, you know, the potential consortium. I think it's really exciting that we have a governor who's willing to make investments of, you know, the time of his agencies and actual monetary resources to look at the problem where it's the most acute. So I hope that we're going to be able to find some success in the reconfiguration. And I'm, of course, always very sympathetic to community concerns. So I think as long as we just continue to keep the communities engaged in those changes, you know, I hope that it creates enough stability and success for groundwork, you know, to lay the groundwork for what might come next with perhaps what the consortium proposes. So, it's a lot of change with more change coming, but I think if we look at it as stabilization with a vision and an actual plan to move forward for those students in their schools, then it should just be building off of each other.
How would lessons learned from Wilmington transfer to other parts of the state?
Like I said, I think what you see in Wilmington is this acute expression of some dysfunctions that are really systemic in our public education system, unfortunately. I mean, I think, yes, because we have the concentration of low-income, largely Black and brown students in the city of Wilmington, that's why I think you sort of see that come to a head in a way that you may not see in other parts of the state. But at the same time, I think some of the policies that I would love to see this body discussing are policies of a statewide nature. So, you know, and that's any of a number of things that you could list. And so I think if we're able to move the needle, so to speak, on some of those issues, it absolutely could have an impact in the direction that districts go, or even if there are statewide policy changes that need to be made, obviously there could be a ripple effect for other folks.
So tell me about your bill to register kids in kindergarten.
The SB 150 shows how something that seems very small, including the students themselves, can actually be really impactful. So this was a bill that I've worked on with the Delaware Readiness Teams, and those are really grassroots advocates who are focused on early childhood education and some of the barriers that exist before students come to school in terms of students being ready to learn and having access to high-quality education and so on and so forth. So what we were hearing from some of those advocates is just that the process of registering your child for kindergarten, which seems like it should be a pretty straightforward one, can actually be pretty complicated, particularly if English isn't your first language or you have other barriers to accessing maybe the documents that you need to register and or getting to the physical location, things like that. So what we hope to do is to streamline that process, make it a little bit more modern, and bring technology into it, still be, you know, having the option of paper-based and those types of things. And really just making it more consistent across school districts. So right now you can see some variation from district to district, and this would create something more standardized. I would say in the spirit of what Representative Kim Williams did with creating some more standardization for the choice enrollment or application process. So anything that makes it easier for parents to navigate the school system, I think, is a wonderful thing. And if you can do that at that earliest entry point, I think you're setting the student and the family up for a much more successful journey through that system. We want to make it easier for folks to register their students early, because right now we see people registering their students late or, you know, last minute, and what that does is it reduces things like access to participating in the choice process that a parent may not even know exists. And so all of those things, you know, we want to kind of push the knowledge and push the access up earlier so that everyone can meaningfully participate. And that in and of itself will be a boost for equity in our schools.